It was that same concept that giving ownership and passing the baton and empowering her to lead and be the best representative of Fox Health in Atlanta.
Welcome back to Evolving Your Workplace, where we discuss real-time workplace issues with experts to get you the best solutions for your company. I'm your host, Carol Schultz, organizational strategist and creator of the Organizational Scaffold System. Let's get into it. Greetings and welcome back to Evolving Your Workplace. I'm Carol Schultz. So I have a favor to ask. If you aren't already following us on Spotify, now is the time to do it so you can stay alerted with each and every new episode. So let's get into today's topic. One key part of a great workplace is creating a culture of ownership. Employees that take ownership of their role rather than waiting for your approval on everything. I remember when I first started marketing on Instagram, I hired a young man to run it and told him to take it and run. I trust you, you're the expert. And although he was very kind, he proceeded to do absolutely nothing unless given specific guidance and ideas from my team. He needed reminders and never initiated concepts ever. And a few months later, I replaced him with someone else. And this guy completely took initiative to design a plan for growth, wrote scripts for me to record, constantly brought new ideas to the forefront, and it made a massive difference, to say the least. So this trait of ownership versus dependence is valuable. But the question is, can you create it? And if you as a leader can somehow bring this out of your team, your company will be, I believe, 10x or more successful. So here to ponder this with me is Amit Gere, CEO and co-founder of Fox Health. So Amit, I appreciate you being with me today. And before we get into the topic today, tell me a little bit about Fox Health.
Fox Health is, once again, thanks for having me on the show. Fox Health is a tech-enabled logistics company for healthcare. We help save health systems from FedEx, UPS, or the local courier by providing a patient-centric delivery experience with better outcomes, especially when it comes to delivering the most expensive, mostly temperature-sensitive medications in the world. These newer weight loss drugs also fall into that category as well. So that's what we do at Fox Health, and that's our mission to deliver better.
Outstanding. So while we're on the subject of the company, and we'll get into the topic here in just a little bit, but you know, what was the aha moment that you had, right? I mean, you're a physician by education, mm-hmm. and formally did that for business.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about that background and how this idea came to you.
Sure. So I was in med school the year the iPhone was announced, 2007. When I saw that device, I said, that device could help patients remember to take their medication, which is a big reason why patients are labeled as non-adherent. So I was obsessed with this idea that I could build an app for this device. It could help patients remember to take their medication. Mm-hmm. And this was a year before the App Store even existed. If anyone remembers their iPhone history, when the phone first came out, Steve Jobs was against the idea of third-party developers making anything for his precious device. Right. Of course, that tune changed and the App Store became a monumental part of the, you know, the ecosystem of using the device. Right. So through med school, I was trying to build this app. I had hired a developer, it didn't work out. And then I eventually met my co-founder. And I told him, I'm a doctor, I have these ideas. And he goes, great, I'm a developer and I don't have any ideas. So we got together and we built that medication reminder app. And unfortunately, it failed. By then, these reminder apps were sort of a dime a dozen. Mm-hmm. There's nothing special about what our app did versus what others. And as he moved back to India and I moved to California, I still had this idea that maybe pharmacies would enjoy or find this app useful. So I started cold calling pharmacies I could drive to. And one of them was in San Diego. And I discovered they offered free same-day delivery as a way to compete against the chain pharmacies. Mm. So I thought, wow, that's great. As a physician, I didn't even know that existed. And that actually cures the other one-third of reason why patients are labeled non-adherent. They don't pick up their medications. So I pitched to them. I said, if we built you all an app for patients to find pharmacies like yours that offer delivery based on their zip code, would you pay us? And so they're very open-minded and early adopter-minded. They said, sure. So my co-founder moves back to California, or back to the States. We built that app, and that was Fox Health originally. And the idea worked on paper. We'd gotten a few delivery requests, but ultimately it failed too. And my co-founder moves back to India. I continued my day job. And then that's when we got our first cold call from a health system in New Orleans who said, we need help offering free same delivery for patients after a virtual visit. And this was in 2018 or so, before there was even that much telehealth happening, but not at the level that COVID had sparked. So eventually we got our first contract with them, and we were still just my co-founder and I living 9,000 miles apart. So we were a remote company before it was in vogue.
Right.
And we figured it out, signed a major health system in the US. And that story we told from the first health system eventually blossomed to the second. And now we're over 20 health systems around the country. And I've been able to leave my full-time job as a physician to basically deliver care a little bit differently now.
Yeah, that's terrific. So tell me what you experience with your team when it comes to ownership.
Yeah, great question. So I like to joke that I'm the least qualified person at my company, you know, a software-based logistics company. I don't know how to write software, and I never knew much about logistics other than being a recipient of packages like anyone else. So I think there's a happy accident that happens when you're building a team when it comes to ownership. And what I mean by that is when I first started, I had to learn everything. And I was sort of Grand Central Station to delivery issues, to patient questions, to client relations. And so you learn first through the school of hard knocks what it takes to manage your business as it stands today. And as you add team members, so employee number one basically was a medical logistics expert, and there's a lot to learn from them. But it is, when you add team members, you want to hopefully pass that ownership to them. But if you don't know what you're passing to them and what the problems you're trying to solve, you're not going to understand whether it's a good or bad choice when you do pass that baton to them. So when I did pass that baton to, you know, that our first hire, the medical logistics expert, I let him run with it in the sense that I was learning from him. And that's how you always sort of want to hire. You want to hire from someone you can learn from. And it may not be the first or second hire, because those first or second hires may just be your company in that stage of still surviving. You're all just figuring things out. But eventually, hopefully very early, you're realizing we need to hire people that can teach you about what it takes to take this business to the next level, even if it's going from your second to third customer. And then basically looking for that ownership where you can learn from them and let them take that responsibility of saying, okay, we have to do X and I know how to do it. And to your example of that second Instagram manager you hired, they're able to teach you and script you to scale you. And that's exactly what had happened. So my advice is learn the business through and through as much as you can as possible until you're physically unable to do something. So if you're starting a restaurant, you may not be a chef, but you should be able to operate every aspect of that restaurant except for cooking that duck.
Yeah. And that's really interesting because, you know, I just interviewed somebody earlier today, and that's, I mean, she learned her business, which was a family business, when she finally came into it, really from the ground floor up. And learned every aspect of it before there was even the possibility of her taking over for her father and becoming the CEO of this company. And, you know, not everybody has that. I don't necessarily want to say it's a luxury, because, I mean, the failure rate from generation one to generation two in a family owned business is mammoth. It's like 80%, I think.
Got it.
That's scary. You know, and let's face it, the failure rate in a startup is probably higher than that, actually, I mean, 1 in 10 maybe succeed. 1 in 10, you know, return massive amounts of money to investors and so on. But, you know, so it's a fairly low percentage as well. And when we first talked, you had mentioned somebody, I believe it was somebody down in Atlanta that you hired. Tell me about that.
So part of our model is we, you know, we're in these different cities around the country. And even though we're still a remote company, we still need some level of oversight in the areas that we operate. So we hired an operations manager in Atlanta. She oversees our Atlanta-based health system client, Grady Health there. And she took full ownership of that health system. And what was great about her, I mean, she had a history, she had no history in the past of doing medical logistics or even healthcare. But I hired her because of a story she told me, that she used to manage a multi-state roadside assistance business. I said, well, the core workflow to that is actually analogous to what we need. And there's a big logistics component to that, because you have to get someone from A to B to help them roadside. With our line of business, we have to move something A to B to help a patient and receive their medications at home. So I hired her based on that story alone. I still don't even know what her resume says, or what her educational background is whatsoever. And she's done extremely well. Yes, I remotely manage her, but she in Atlanta manages our Atlanta-based client fully, And It was that same concept that giving ownership and passing the baton and empowering her to lead and be the best representative of Fox Health in Atlanta. We were at that stage where I had a rough playbook on what to do, and she ran with it and wrote her own paragraphs.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting to me is I think, you know, partly you got lucky, right? Yeah, I don't even know what her education was.
It.
I don't know what her, I mean, I'd say that was a happy accident for you as a founder who probably didn't know what he was doing when he was hiring anybody, but you noticed that one thing. I mean, she could have ended up being a horrible leader. You know, I mean, I think you got really lucky. That's not always the case. But, you know, the moral of the story is that fortunately that all turned out okay. And the fact that she has completely taken ownership, right? And there's so many leaders out there. I mean, we've talked about this. I mean, it's sometimes it's a cultural thing. Oh, you know, kind of culture a CEO's building. But the interesting thing is that so many leaders do not give their people the rope with which to potentially hang themselves, right? And that's what you have to do is give them that rope to either, you know, either succeed or not hang themselves, really, right? And not hang themselves because they want to control everything.
Yeah, and that won't allow you to scale further than your reach, right? Because you have to understand that your team, you hire someone to help you and ideally even replace you, and even further, ideally, do better than what you could, because you cannot be an expert at everything.
No,
it's impossible. You can be an expert enough to get your business from 0 to 1 or 0 to 5. But the whole goal is what I think the knowledge base is that you need to hire these systems, people to manage these systems for you so you can scale. Because racially, I mean, now we're in 12 states. There's no way I could personally manage that.
No.
I could if I had the bandwidth for it. I know what to do. And I instruct my team when anyone who first starts, you know, don't ever look to see what I would do. Always look to see what's in the best interest of the patient. And that's actually the same, you know, feedback and mantra that physicians have, right? What's in the best interest of the patient? Mm-hmm. So when we're solving logistics or operational issue, whether it's in Atlanta or Pennsylvania, you know, what would the patient's experience do to feel better about this? Do that. You know, don't look to see what I would tell you to do, because that's my outlook on that. So by empowering them, reminding everyone of what the mission is every patient deserves the best delivery experience no matter where they live. Ask yourselves, what can I do to meet that mission? So that way it doesn't become a mid-gear mantra, it becomes a Fox Health mantra. And that becomes sort of a commandment or a philosophy of the company. And that's the foundation of culture.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So for leaders listening, what can they actively do? And you may have experienced this already, when somebody's not showing ownership. And have you made those hires where somebody didn't show ownership? Or
well,
have you been
awareness,
just continued
right?
to have this lucky streak of not having this ever happen yet?
I mean, we've had some issues, but nothing like fireable offense issues. Like we've been pretty lucky in the first few hires. And I when I left and started this company, I'd never hired someone ever.
Right.
And the first person I hired, this medical logistics expert, was hired because I was basically desperate. Like I would have taken one of those things that just hit the any key, those little birds that hit the any key. That's on that Simpsons. I needed help, right?
Right.
And luckily, that was a luck. I'll concede it was luck that he has been fantastic. He's been an expert at this, and I've learned from him. He's learned from us, and he's helped live up that mission. But when it doesn't work, you kind of have to act on that quickly. Working with what I call fast feedback. It's a common term now. Giving them that feedback to say, hey, this isn't working. The patient experienced X when it should have been Y. And then seeing if they improve. So I like to say that we run our logistics company like an intensive care unit. You know, this is where patients who are the sickest are admitted and have a high chance of dying in the next 24 hours. So everything is very serious there. So what if we brought that mentality to what we do at a company? Measure everything, see what the response is, measure it again, and keep fixing it in a circular pattern. And the smaller that circle exists, is the better your company can improve. And that works for people too. So, you know, micro feedback, if something's not working. And then on the flip side of that, when something is working, total acknowledgement. To this day, I say, Mike, thanks for that idea. You know, or this is Mike's idea as I present something. I never own a good idea. I only own a bad idea or a bad outcome. You know, I take the onus on that. So when people see that their ideas and what's working is, you know, they're giving the shout out for that, that empowers them to fast feedback themselves. Like, I'm going to do good. I'm going to present good ideas and move forward.
Yeah, I think that's super important. But let me have you create a distinction here about this because, you know, you talk about microfeedback. So how do we distinguish between microfeedback and micromanagement?
That's a good point. I mean, so management, I don't know. So I'd say microfeedback is, okay, I'll tell you why. The reason micro is because of the speed of which you provide that feedback.
Got it.
Like, we're not waiting for a quarterly performance review or weekly or something.
Right.
If something's not happening right at the moment, just like, you know, when dealing with your kids, the sooner you act upon that, the faster that they have the insight that this is probably not the best way, and they'll hopefully change. And like I even tell our clients, if we make mistakes, yes, the mistake's not great, but look to our response to that mistake and how fast it's fixed. So the same should exist with your employees. They can make mistakes, and we encourage them to. Experimentation is the way companies last for 100 years.
I agree.
But if it's a mistake that's not fixed in a timely manner, or it's repeated, that's a red flag that this person may not be coachable. Micromanaging is not the issue. It's management itself.
Yeah, that's so great. You know, as I'm listening to this, it takes me back to the early to mid-late 90s. I spent 9 years the first 9 years of my search career with a firm. And, you know, I had all sorts of problems back then, you know. I was a terrible leader. It was my first leadership role anyway, you know, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, they would always wait to have any conversation with me until there was like a pile of shit to discuss with me.
Yeah, right.
And I would always say to them, why did you wait this long? Why didn't you just nip it in the bud right away? I mean, it was ridiculous. In hindsight, they were horrible managers, both of these guys.
Doesn't help either.
Because I would never run my business that way. Never.
Right.
You know, and of course, the more I matured, the more better I got as a leader, the more training I did and so on and so forth. And started my own coaching and training work. That all started to fix itself. But yeah, I could never understand, why are you waiting 3 months to talk to me about something? Because how can I fix it if I don't know?
That's right. You can't solve a problem.
I'm not omniscient.
And then, yeah, it'd be a lot easier if we were, but yeah, I guess it stems from, you know, trying to build a culture where feedback is welcomed. Experimentation without hurting someone is welcomed. And that's sometimes not easy to do, but the one way I think, looking back at our company, is I sort of led by example. Like, they saw how I was up to 11, you know, on the phone with the patient trying to get this delivery issue solved. And I don't expect them to stay up to 11 every day, but at least if you're going to be hopefully the best example of what we're trying to achieve at this company, even if they do 50% of that, that's that much way along of what we're trying to create and lead. And I still try to do that to this day, that, you know, this is what I would want to do. And going back to that mission statement of what we're trying to achieve.
And I'm so glad you mentioned that, because, you know, I think about one of the first things I do whenever I take on a new client engagement after I do my discovery meetings and, you know, produce a roadmap and my results, is we almost always, one of the first things we do is start working on what it is to be a culture of feedback, right?
Yeah.
And if companies don't have for those of you who may be listening to this for the first time, you know, culture of feedback is being able to provide feedback to anyone at any level, right? So I can give it to the side, I can give it below, I can give it above. And it has to be driven by you, the CEO, of course, right? Because if you don't drive it, it's never going to happen. And the CEO has to be, of course, committed to that and explain to people, here's what it looks like. And oh, by the way, it's not going to happen tomorrow, because you have to be out there out front really producing examples of this on a daily basis.
That's right. And
it makes all the difference in the world. And of course, then by nipping those things in the bud, if you have that culture of feedback, you can then, people are so much more receptive to it.
And then how that manager responds to it, you know, do you blow up in their face, say, how dare you do this, or, you know, or make an example of them in front of people? Like, that's not
helping. Of course.
And looking even with going back to the child rearing example, you know, if you build a relationship with your children that you fix issues based on love and not fear, that love is way more powerful than fear. I mean, and obviously in the workplace, you know, love is not a word we're going to use for HR reasons, but at least for, you know, a comforting environment where you can provide feedback and you can respond to feedback, where you're not worried about the repercussions or being made an example of or being yelled at. I mean, these are not ways to improve behavior.
No. And then that's how you
avoid that culture of fear.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I can't even begin to build a culture of feedback till people learn how to communicate effectively. Right.
Right.
So that those two things have to go hand in hand, because it is just imperative how you speak to people. And you know, we don't always, because, and I think it's getting worse now because of how we communicate. Between texting and emailing, people don't talk to each other.
All these forms of communication, but it's made it worse. You're right.
Exactly. I've talked about this extensively. It has really just exacerbated the problem. And it is just so important. And my fear is it's going to even continue to get worse as we get into AI more, right? You know, with AI telling everybody what a genius they are all the time. I'm like, stop it.
The race to mediocrity.
BS. Yeah, right. The race to mediocrity. Exactly. I think it'll even be worse than that.
Yeah.
So you've been at the business now for 5.5 years, and you've grown the company to about 14 companies stateside. I know your development team, and you have, you know, drivers in India. You've got about 25 stateside. People. Yeah. Over there. How are you managing? And your partner's still over in India. Yeah. Your co-founder.
Yeah. He actually moved to Dubai about 2 years ago. So we're now in 3 different countries, you know, close to 50 people in 3 different countries.
Got it. Okay. All right. I didn't realize that. So how are you dealing with being in 3 different countries, right? And the people, you know, does whoever managing your people, let's say in India, especially if that's your co-founder who no longer lives there, right? How do you, you know, I assume you have other managers on the ground there that, you know, can handle these things, right?
Exactly.
And you know, so, India is a different culture than the United States, certainly, as is Dubai. Right. How do you deal with those kind of cultural shifts around getting people to take ownership if they're not used to being in an environment like that?
Yeah, so actually, even since we spoke, we've now got an office in India. So we've now brought everyone in-house.
Fantastic.
On the Indian team side, as far as developers, our logistics operators,
awesome.
Now in-house. And then to your point, we had a manager, project manager in India, because primarily development was being done in India. A project manager whose technical background was enough. But now that we've brought in a team of also logistics operators, we really had to bring them into one facility and kind of come together. Mm-hmm. And I wish we could do that stateside. Our team stateside is still all over the map, because technically we have to be because of all these delivery zones. Mm-hmm. But I noticed, at least in India, that's been an immense help on the camaraderie of it all. And we got a small dose of that last July when we had all come, our entire company basically met in Cleveland to reboot a client of ours. And just to see everyone working together, meeting each other for the first time, the ideas, the collaboration, it was incredible. And so we don't have that sort of managerial oversight in the US because we're all over the map. But I at least saw a sample of that in India. So hiring someone who's a manager who knows what the global mission is, as well as the local mission, you know, finding that person to kind of straddle that has been invaluable. And then just yesterday, we hired someone in between these two time zones. She actually resides in Scotland. And so she's also going to be a project manager, but she's also going to be a liaison between the product needs stateside and the product needs in India. And by straddling the time zones and using the time zones to our advantage, she can represent both parts of the globe for us. And so we basically play up to that, you know, not see that as a burden or a hindrance to schedules, but actually as an advantage.
I'm actually glad you mentioned that, because I'm going to, that's the right word to use. I'm going to confront you with something here with a question, and that made me think about it. So what percentage of your employees are female? It's different with everybody. And do you find culturally, because I know a number of Indian founders, and one in particular who, he moved here to the States to start growing his footprints here. And his wife, who's his co-founder, is still living in India, and she is having a major issue with the men on their development team not respecting her.
Yeah.
I also wonder about Dubai. Right. I don't know enough about that, but you know, it's a Middle Eastern country. Women are typically not held in as high regard as men are. So I wonder how that.
Dubai is a bit more liberal than most of the other Middle East countries.
Right.
And to answer your first question, I think we're actually over 50% female at this company, just by happy accident. Like, I sort of half joke that, you know, I don't hire based on melanin levels or gender. I hire on merit, right? How effective can it be at the job that's at hand? If you happen to be, you know, a Filipina from Seattle, fantastic. You know, bring that. I even joke that the first person who we did hire, that medical logistics expert, Well, he was our diversity hire, and he was a white guy from Tennessee, and we were
Who's your
primarily an
diversity
Indian
hire?
company, so
Yeah,
he was our
right.
diversity hire. I almost made him head of diversity, and we are a very diverse company. I mean, like I said, Filipino background, India. So, and then to answer your question about respecting the lines, I mean, I try to reduce the layers of management, right? That we're if we can be as flat as possible. Knowing that there still has to be a leader and,
Correct.
subordinates, that culture's still there, but it's how we going back to how we treat one another. And I think that stems from, my mom. So my mom is and was, she's retired now, a businesswoman. She was an army colonel, and she was an assistant professor at the dental school in Tennessee, and she commanded a lot of respect. And how, my dad, treated her, and that's, we should all be equal. We're on the same
Right.
page here. And I get different cultures have different perspectives on roles and all that, and gender roles, but at a company that shouldn't exist, right? Because we're all here,
I
hopefully on the
agree.
same mission.
Right.
And any element of disrespect means you're most likely going to disrespect our patients if you can't even disrespect, if you can't even respect our own team member, and they've got to go, right? We can't stand for that whatsoever. So it needs to be everyone's on the same mission. I don't care your gender, your background, whether US or India based, we're all in the interest of the patient experience.
Yeah, that's really, really great to hear. So how did you end up with somebody in Scotland?
Yeah, actually my co-founder met her through another project they had done a couple of years ago. So it's not like we were actually recruiting in the Edinburgh time zone just
Well,
for
right, that's why I'm
the sake of
curious.
this.
Yeah.
That was like a happy accident. So yeah,
Right.
she's from Maryland, but she happened to be living in Scotland at the time or
Got
now.
it.
So we said, oh, that's actually to an advantage. Perfect. So you actually geographically works out your role.
Because of where she is with the time zone changes and so on, kind of halfway in between. Yeah, that's actually really very interesting because, of course, I have certain people who work for me in India, Pakistan, and I think I have two in Pakistan, one in India. And they do, some of my social media. These are my social media people who are just like genius. And it's always challenging because they have to, they have to, they work part US hours and part, local hours, right? So, one of my guys in Pakistan, I'll hear from in the middle of my day. And the other one, I'll hear from him around 7 in the evening or 8 in the evening
Or the
for
middle of the
me.
night.
And I mean, by then I'm like, dude, I've been up since like 4:30 or 5 o'clock. The last thing I want to think about is this, right? But if I don't have to use too much brain power for it, then I'm happy to do that. So that I can see where that will really help because she's in between the two areas. That should help immensely for that kind of stuff.
And even like you're doing, I think using time zones not as a hindrance, but always see it as an advantage. And if we could do development or whatever work 20 almost 24/7 hours a day without burdening one team or the other, that's great. I mean, one of my greatest things, I like waking up to, here's all the improvements we did to the product overnight. I'm
While
like,
you were
awesome. While I was sleeping. So there's that concept of making money while you sleep, but the idea of making progress while you sleep is also great too.
Yeah, I agree. And it's those are the hardest, and I've got somebody in Central Europe who my webmaster's in the Ukraine. And usually I'll get up in the morning and there'll be a message from him on Teams, right? If I don't get to him, I mean I can usually get to him till, 9 o'clock or even sometimes 10 o'clock his time. But, after that, he's not obviously checking, nor should he need to do that, right? I just think
But I will
that,
caveat,
go on.
I'll caveat all that by saying, if a major part of your company relies on international, make sure you have someone who's part of the company there. You don't want to say outsource development to another country, like
Right.
major development, because lack of oversight can the opposite can
I
happen too. It
agree.
could be a major, and I almost learned the hard way that way. And our company only existed and grew because my co-founder, 50/50 partner, lived, resided, spoke the language, and was there with the developers.
Yeah, I
So
think
that's a big
I
difference.
agree, and I'm glad you're pointing that out because I have talked to, I've had people say, "Oh, I'd love to be on your show." Well, where are you headquartered? Oh, I'm headquartered in Seattle. Well, how come when I look at your background there you have absolutely no employees here in the United States? Oh, well, because they're all in India. So, yeah, I'm not interested in interviewing you. You're not building a company here. You're to your point, you're just outsourcing cheap labor to another country, whatever that country might happen to be. And you're saying, "Well, I'm headquartered here because, it's where, Delaware or wherever you are." And I just think that that always kind of sets me feeling like I need a shower, you know. Don't tell me you're headquarter here, because that's really just, you're just blowing sunshine up my skirt. You're not employing any Americans, you know. And, right. And listen, I'm a big fan of global, just like you've got. I've got a global workforce, right? I've got people mm-hmm. here in the States. I've got people in Central Europe. I've got people in Asia. And it's, you know, because they're all really, really good at what they do. And that's right. You know, that's the beautiful thing about what we have now, that's to right. be able to have a global workforce.
That's right.
Right.
And then, you know, the flip side or front side, whatever you want to call it, the idea that, especially if you're in the services businesses, like that has to be one-to-one. That's always going to be, you know, in, mm-hmm. you know, one-to-one, like you're going to have a team stateside, but play to the strengths of the stuff you can sort of, you know, outsource or put elsewhere. And especially when it comes to development costs, if you're able to do it effectively, like we just talked about, you can save immensely on that cost. Mm-hmm. And that can help you grow the business. And then if you right. get to a point and say, okay, I need to bring development to San Francisco for
that's
whatever
right.
reason, then go ahead and hire that. But don't make the San Francisco price mistake first. And it's yeah. tempting to do that, especially for companies that want to be a tech company or start there and mm-hmm. say, well, I need to hire someone in San Francisco and, you know, to do this. Like, no, you can get pretty far figuring out, you know, now with AI, just to harp on that for a second, you know, vibe coding something basic to see if it's a value.
Right.
But
Yeah. Amit, is there anything that we haven't talked about that you want to bring up before we close this conversation out?
No, I mean, like I'm hoping that we can be an example that remote teams are very possible. And you can also scale immensely with remote mm-hmm. teams, but you have to do it, you know, systematically and with purpose. Don't just hire because it's cheaper. Hire because it's hire broad or hire remotely because yeah. it's also better.
Yeah.
And if better exceeds the cheaper element of what you're trying to achieve, mm-hmm. that's how you'll be successful.
I completely agree.
That some element of your business needs to stay stateside, needs to mm-hmm. be maybe in your backyard. Mm-hmm. Or depending on what type of business, like in the healthcare and data security side, there are parts of our business that cannot be overseas whatsoever. And play to that if, you know, your yeah. call center, your
right.
sales team, whatever, needs to be stateside. So, like I say, I'm just hoping to be an example that it is possible, but you have to do it systematically and
yep.
with
well.
Purpose.
I can't put anything on top of that because I agree with you 1,000%. So that said, Amit Gir, CEO and co-founder of Fox Health, thanks for being with me. I know we had a little trouble getting on our first call, and fortunately, once we finally did that, the rest of the process
yeah,
went nice
though.
And smoothly. So I appreciate
yeah,
your time.
No worries. No, I appreciate the time, girl, and hearing our story thus far, and you know how we're hopefully building a global team with a universal culture.
Sounds great. Thanks for listening to Evolving Your Workplace. Is there a topic you want to discuss? Let us know what you think in a review. And don't forget to click follow to stay up to date on upcoming episodes. Thanks again for listening, and see you next time.